When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at Burrow.com/ACAST. That's Burrow.com/ACAST. Burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome to Health and Safety Conversations. Here's your host, Tom Bourne.
Hi, and welcome to Health and Safety Conversations. I'm your host, Tom Bourne, and with me today is absolutely marvelous Wayne McCoy. Wayne, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you, Tom?
Good. Are you really well, though?
Well, as well as I can be with stage 4 of lung cancer, but being very well looked after by some sectional staff here at Geelong Hospital, so
yeah,
the pain comes and goes, so we'll work through that, but start chemo tomorrow, so hopefully that's a good start of getting my health back on track again.
Yeah. It's terrible to hear that, Wayne, and I'm sad that we've met at this time and not earlier, but that's okay. It is what it is.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Can I ask you one question to start with? Because this lung cancer is this from, I don't know, smoking, or do you know what's caused it?
Well, they believe it's from smoking. I haven't smoked for about 2.25 years, but it's still caught up with me.
Yeah.
I was probably smoking something like 25, 30 years prior. So, there's a lot of bad stuff that's gone on between now and then. And as far as smoking goes, but giving up the smoking was the best thing I've ever did, other than marrying my wonderful wife. Probably the best thing I've ever did was give up smoking. But like I said, it's still put up for me. So, yeah. But at least, I'm very lucky that I'm in the 21st century in the third decade of the 21st century at that. So, quite like that. They've got the medicines and the procedures that they have these days are far more advanced than what they were 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago.
Yeah. Does it concern you the last few years I've seen a huge intake of people who've gone literally from smoking to this new wave of vaping?
Vaping. Oh, I think that's ridiculous. I think it's more dangerous. It appears to be more dangerous. I'm not 100% knowledgeable on that subject, but from my understanding, the vaping is far worse than smoking, because people think that they're doing better. They're trying to give up smoking and I'm vaping instead. Well, mate, you're still taking nicotine, and I've seen some reports that some people have been hospitalised from vaping. So I can't see it being an alternative, and the companies are very smart in how they market it and suck the young people in. So it's just another lie that they put together to sell a product.
Yeah. All right, Wayne, I know a little bit about you because I see you occasionally on LinkedIn, and I've also done a little bit of research. But for those who don't know much about you yet, can you tell us a little bit about your professional journey, where you started, and how you ended up in safety?
Yeah, well, it's an interesting story. Yeah, we go way back to the days when I was living in Adelaide and working for GMH Holden, actually witnessed a workplace death. maybe about half a dozen others. We had this contract, they're coming, it's back in the glory days when they were making 600 to 700 cars a day. So, you know, production was really ramped up and they couldn't afford to have any machines out on in maintenance. They just wanted them back in play because they, you know, you stop their body shop. It's about $50,000 an hour. So it's really critical to keep things running from their perspective. So this contract, he was coming in, he just topped up the oils, checked the oil levels, topped them up. I mean, this machine was rushed back into production and called a chiller machine. So what happens with the injection mold machine, you've got bees eating the hopper, comes down into this gun, which heats up to about 600 to 700 degrees, and then it ejects into the mold. And it's like an explosion, just fills up the mold, and this chilling machine throws in a ton of water, cold water to harden the material so it can be extracted from the mold. Comes down to us operators, we inspect it, true it, pack it, stamp it, and pack it. And anyway, this chilling machine was, as I said, rushed back into operation. The guy put his hand on it, and it was electrified without him knowing, and he got zapped straight away. He's electrocuted and died straight on the spot. There was half a dozen of us, like I said, about 6 or 7 of us witnessed that. We were able to try to help him out, and we couldn't resuscitate him, and just watched him die. So one of the guys was smart enough to turn the machine off and isolate it, so no one else could be suffer that same peril. And as it turned out, that machine didn't have the safety checks go through before it was put back into operation, so they missed a step. And unfortunately, one of their wires wasn't connected properly, and it had come off and touched the metal casing, therefore making the unit live. So that's as much as I know about that. And they caught it. Oh, excuse me, the pain. Caught a kismet or the kudos. About 2 weeks after that, there was an advertisement in my area for a health and safety representative, and I saw it. And I thought about it, and a bunch of other people saw it because I was normally a spokesperson for the group. And they all come to me and said, "Look, why don't you go for it? Because we'll support you. We want you to represent us." So, okay, well, that's nice to have that support. So I thought, yeah, I'll put my hand up. And that's the start of my journey. Yeah. And ever since then, I've always maintained that, you know, it was sort of my profile that short COVID can only cut you off short without someone else. So that's my go-to. And make sure that people don't take shortcuts, because if you want to take a shortcut, well, let's make sure you go and do it in a safe way. Mm. So, you know, I've seen the worst end of it, and I don't want to see that again. Yeah. Not on my watch.
No, absolutely not. All right, just having a look back, I see we have a shared employer at one stage.
We both worked as mail officers for Australia Post. How'd you find that?
Oh, that's a long time ago, yeah. Well, that was when I went back to my first marriage broke up, but I came back home to mum and dad and just a bit of support network. And my father, he worked for Australia Post at the time, and yeah, it just happened to. I think he helped me get the job, but they said, no, you got it on your own, but whatever. It was still employment, so it was a good experience. It was good, not a bad gig, but I tell you what, they are rough and ready in the background. Yes. Hopefully they improve, but from the news stories I've seen recently, things haven't changed too much.
No. I went back 15 years after I left to train some of their health and safety reps, literally Adelaide, Dandenong, Geelong, Sydney, and in Brisbane. And I could tell you, there's very little changed 15 years after I left. I was surprised. I was like, you still have the same problems, exactly the same problems that we had back then. And I don't know. I don't know if that's not, whether they're not smart enough or they're just not committed enough, but.
Oh, I think everything like that starts with management.
Yeah.
And the shop will have a fair bit to do with it as well. So it's a bit of both. So you've got anything to do with culture. There's two components. You've got your short floor component, you've got your top management component. That's what's stopping you from getting from where you are to where you need to be. And that's having a genuine care for another person and genuine care about your work environment. So it's not just about people, it's about processes and procedures and training and the whole kit and caboodle.
Yeah. You've done a stack since you've got into safety, you've worked for a lot of employers. Out of all of them, which has been your favourite?
Oh, look, at the moment, I have to say where I am at Murat, I have to say that because they have been tremendously supportive through my situation now. Mm-hmm. And it's a really challenging environment. It's a forever changing environment. But they've been outstanding. Prior to that, I'd have to go back and say probably Marvel Stadium. And Sabelco be there too. But Marvel Stadium was outstanding in that it has so many different events. And it wasn't just football. It was cricket, soccer, the cage fighting, basketball. That was a big event. The motocross, they have all these sorts of programs going on, and even the RMIT when they do the presentations for at the end of the year, and that's a big event in itself. And then the Jehovah's Witness Convention, and this goes on and on. So I had to do emergency evacuation, emergency management plans for each and every one of those events, and every one is different. So it's a real changing environment, and to see what happens in behind the scenes is quite incredible. So there's a lot of people doing a lot of hard work. And the managers in the background are absolutely superb people. So, yeah, Milestone was a cracker. But unfortunately, COVID got in the way of that, and there was another redundancy. So over my time, I've had suffered four redundancies, and two of them during the COVID times. Mm. And then there's a bunch of contract work as well. So this is probably where I am now is I want to stay. I really love the job. I love the people, and they love me. And like I said, they've been tremendously supportive, so I just want to stay here for the rest of my days, which is another, well, hopefully, depending on what's going on here, but hopefully another 10 years or so. So that's my plan.
Sweet, sweet. Just want to talk to you about public management and events with safety. Must be completely world different than for most safety professionals, because you've got that marvellous thing called the public and their behaviour. I got to tell you, I won't say which, but I've been to a stadium recently, we'll say that, and yeah. Every time I've been to this stadium, it seems to be problematic, not so much getting people into the stadium, getting them out. And I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm from another planet, but I would think that the priority here is getting them out as quickly as possible in a safe manner. But
yes,
you know, sometimes it takes 40 minutes.
That's a long time.
That's a long time. And when you only open a few gates for people to go, I just go, there's so much potential here for things to go wrong.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're damn right. Yeah, well, that's one thing that we, at Milestone, we made sure that we had all the gates are magnetic, so they can be opened from the control room at any time. So, and they know where we've got quadrants. At Milestone, we had quadrants, and I dare say all stadiums we had the same similar thing. So we've got four ramps, basically. So the first thing we've got, when you've got an event going on, say a U2 concert, for example, mm-hmm. you've got to look after the talent. So the talent goes around in the back of the house, and they get escorted out. And meanwhile, you don't forget the public, of course, but in the public, we try to guide them out. We've got team leaders at various locations, put people out, and then we had the wording around the stadium, the tiers, with the LED lighting at the front for those tier stands. So we had lighting there too, so pointing at the exit this way, so we could then help guide people out in an orderly manner. And we did that. We watched that at the end of the, I think it was the end of the basketball, where, I can't remember, it might not be in basketball, there was another event. But we watched it at the end of it, and when people finish, they want to go, they just go. And it really worked really well. We just had the signs out, this way out, and it worked really well. So it can be done. It's just got to be coordinated well.
Yeah. I've never been to an event in the MCG, but the people I've spoken to tell me that within about 15 to 20 minutes, they can have the full house completely gone. And that's, to me, I would have thought that's, as I said, I think that's the ultimate aim, isn't it? Once the event's over, it's let's get everyone out as quickly as we can in a safe manner.
Yeah.
Because, because there is potential there when you've got a large crush of people all wanting to go out. But, you know.
Yeah, exactly right. If you're more, and the more gates you have open, the easier it is to, for people to flow out. Now, you think of a hornet's nest, they've got various tunnels going through. If they just had one exit to go out, they'll never get out. So you've got to have multiple exits.
Yeah. All right. Lots of different views in safety in the last few years. We've got the old behaviorist view. We've got safety one, safety two. We've got HOP. What does Wayne believe in?
Well, I believe in having the right culture, just being who you are, just being true to yourself, integrity. Just you can't be integrity for me. So I believe, excuse me, you've got to have integrity. It's so important to me. If you say you're going to do something, you just do it. Or if you can't do it, you explain why you can't do it, and this is the plan that you try to go forward to try to get it done, and you may need help. No one knows everything. Not one person knows everything. So I'm not impressed by people with all these letters after their names. I'm more impressed with what they do with it. Because just because you've got letters after your name, just interest to me that you can study. That's all that means to me. But if you apply it, then great, then you've got my interest. But yeah, integrity is a big thing. So and I'm really big on culture. I watched the podcast that you had with Professor
Nectarius Kyrannicus.
No, before that, he was big on the behavioral safety. Andrew Hopkins, yes, it. Yeah, he was brilliant. I'm a big fan of his.
Yep.
And everything that he said, I totally agree with. So I'm pretty on the same page as him. And everywhere I've gone, I'm pretty much been Mr. Fixer. That's okay. I don't mind that. But we've got, I think, the same attitude as each other. And this is, this culture is not just about people. It's the people are a big part of it, but you've got to look at why there's an incident. It never comes down to a single person. It comes down to the organisation always, because if a person has done something deliberate, well, why have they done it deliberate? Why is the culture like this? Because it has evolved that way because of many other factors. You've got procedures, you've got policies, you've got people being involved. Are you involving people in the procedures? Are you involving people in the risk assessment? You're just letting management say, this is the risk assessment, here we go, off you go and do that. And that's where things fall down, because the people will ultimately not follow a procedure that they don't understand. They'll just go their own way, and then you're in strife. So you've got to have people involved in it. They're the subject matter experts. You've got to have them involved, thoroughly involved. And then once you get them involved, you have more of an understanding about what actually goes on. And then you can put it into practice far better than you otherwise would. So you've got to always have those sorts of things in. Same with policies, and you've got to have the consultation. I'm big on consultation as well. So get the HSRs involved, because I'm a HSR from way back, so they'll never get a bigger support than me. I was with a big support. And yeah, you've got to have everyone involved. So, and you've got to be integral. You've got to be really upfront and honest. And all those things in the background have to work. So you've got your training as well. So who's doing the training? Are they qualified to train someone else? Ergonomics, for example. When I was doing a HSR course way back when, I had this guy who's just reading from a book. He's teaching us ergonomics. And we all complain and say, well, we learned nothing from that. We could have read the book and be no better off, no worse off. So to do the right sort of training that's actually involved and committed to making sure that people understand it, you've got to have that passion. If you don't have that passion, then get out. You're not doing the right thing. So that's pretty much what most of it takes. So integrity, credibility, passion, they're three big ones.
Yeah. Is it, would you say that safety advisor, safety roles are predominantly people positions where you actually have to, I don't know, like and care about the people as well as being transparent, honesty, and have that, as you say, integrity?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, definitely. I think if you haven't got a genuine passion, then you shouldn't be in the game. You've got it's not a people who polish their feet with a bum and expect people to do what they want them to do. Well, welcome to the real world, because that's not how it works. You've got to have the passion. You've got to be actually genuine about the care about another person. I run a campaign. I've only been in the RAF for about 10 months. I ran this campaign, I Make a Difference campaign, when I was about 3 months in. And it didn't take me long to get to really know the people really well. And I show them that there was a genuine care. And they all come to me and they all talk to me like I'm their mate, like, or next door neighbor or something like that, so, which is fantastic. And
hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
So I ran this campaign, I Make a Difference, and I showed a video about it, and it was only a 6-minute video, so I was quite short, so I didn't have to have too much attention span. But during that time, you could have heard a pin drop. And then when I gave them the wristbands of that I Make a Difference, and then I looked them in the eye, shook their hand, and said, thank you for making a difference. And the one wristband was for them to wear, and the other two wristbands was to give away to other people who have made a difference in their life. And there's a few of them that actually took that away and sent it to their children, and I gave them the link to the video as well so they could show their children. And they said it was marvellous, and it was just the most heartwarming thing that they've ever done for their family. So it's far-reaching, that sort of stuff. So, and that's the sort of thing I'm talking about. You've got to be absolutely genuine with your passion, not just have a passion. So, I don't want to see it. I want to die again. You can't do that. You've got to be really strict. You've got to put the big stick away, and you've just got to work with the people and work with them hand in hand, as it were. So, you've got to have your hand on heart. I can say, absolutely, I am absolutely genuine with my passion, and the passion doesn't, the emotion doesn't override it. So, it doesn't guide me, or it kind of does guide me, but it doesn't, I guess, doesn't control me 100%, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you started as a HSR, health and safety rep, because you're exposed to industrial incidents and death in the workplace, do you think that basically helps set you up in the role so that you actually, you weren't coming at it as a career, you were coming at it purely from caring about your people?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think you're bang on with that, actually. So it's funny how life works out, because all I was is just a shop floor worker, not doing too much, and just making ends meet, basically. And when this thing happens, and excuse me, the pain's just come back. But yeah, when you see things like that happen, and you go, you don't want to see this happen again, and then your passion is born straight away, because I've been always been genuine with people anyway. I've always been transparent. I've always been upfront. Hence why I was a spokesperson for that group, and hence why they wanted me to represent them. So, and then from there, I could see a career path, and I had some great mentors, as you would have seen on LinkedIn. There are nominated a number of people, Craig Hayter and Jenny Window, to name drop.
Yeah.
They were fantastic people. They really helped me in my career and took me on a path and did my set for and I was just a panorama tape and managed to win the, like you say, the year award from South Africa, Australia, which is fantastic. And that really set me up. And then once they all gave me my first gig in up in Darwin. So then I haven't looked back since.
Yeah. Talking about working away, when you've been a safety advisor, has it been predominantly working in the same area you're living, or has it been fly in and fly out?
No, I've never been fly in, fly out. Kind of have in some ways, but once I was around the country a bit, started down, did some auditing in Mackay and Perth and Bibra Lake, and went over to, like I said, Mackay and Brisbane, Eagle Farm, Newcastle, and the other place, Fort Kembla. So I did some flying around. I went back to Adelaide and back again. So I did some flying around as far as auditing goes, but it's basically in one place. So I wasn't really flying for it, so to speak. It was just fly around the country when needed.
All right. If there was one thing that you've seen in your time in safety that you'd like to change in the future, what would it be?
Change one thing in the future in safety. Wow. Attitudes from the top end.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a big one. You've got the manslaughter charges in Victoria, but you've got the representation is far worse. There's more to it than there's more penalties than the other law. The manslaughter laws. I think the manslaughter laws need to be re-tightened up and it comes back to attitudes again, so I say, but yeah, attitudes is just to be the thing from the top end. It's got to, that's where it all starts, I think. So anything in between from the top end to the shop floor, all the stuff in between, it's got to be get everything out of there. So when you want to talk about that, so you've got your shop floor personnel, your top management, you put your hands together and then all that stuff's out there. Once you organise all of that, you identify where you are. You can use any scar that you want in the safety curve, any type of one that you want to use. So you identify where you are as an individual or as a group or as a team or as an organisation overall. And then you obviously identify where you need to be, which is the point again, where you have that genuine care for each other. And then all that stuff that's probably from getting there. So that's where you start talking about why are we back here? Why are we so reactive? So I'm big on, I don't like lag indicators. I'm big on lead indicators. So all the stuff that's going to stop you from getting hurt. So all your positive performance indicators, your PPIs. So all your training you're going to do, how many hazards are being raised, your risk assessment is going to be done, all those sorts of things. So all your safety meetings, right? All the, everything that helps you from getting people from getting hurt in the first place. So that's the biggest thing. And so you can work out what's stopping you from getting from one point to another point. Then you can slowly work through that. And that's what I'm talking about, all the stuff in the background, all the procedures, all the policies, all the training, getting people involved, having genuine care for others, and eventually it's going to take time because if you're way back being in a reactive stage, then you're a long way off the mark. You've been there for a reason because that's a lot of years of being stuck in that rut, as it were. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done to get to that point in, but the only way you can do it is with the right attitude and the right genuine care, and everyone has to be committed. And it's going to take years of management commitment and shop floor commitment as well. So you just can't put it on one person or one group of people. It's everyone has to be involved. Everyone has to have the same commitment.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of industrial manslaughter, you said you'd like to see it tightened up. Okay, I've got my own opinion about industrial manslaughter, but what do you mean tighten up? What would you like to see?
Well, I think I'd like to see industrial manslaughter is supposed to be this big scary piece. And it's really not. Yeah. The representation is the scary piece, really.
Yep.
So that needs to be put to bed. So that's what I mean by tightening up. So there's going to be a scary piece, then let's put harsher controls, harsher penalties in place, and make it scary. Otherwise, don't make the claim that it's going to be the scary piece when it's not.
Yeah, look, I perfectly honest, industrial manslaughter, the way it's written. Yeah, it's one of those things I think was done, again, like most things in safety, with best intentions, but my God, it misses the mark. It's the number of successful prosecutions you're going to have from that, let alone it being a deterrent, is absolute minimal. It's got a big sounding reputation, but yeah, I think it misses the mark. Something severe.
Oh, absolutely it does. Absolutely it does. So yeah, when it first came in, I blindly thought, yeah, this is good. The intention was good. So like you said, really, the way it's written is weak as water, to be honest. So, yeah.
Which is why we've had so few successful prosecutions across Australia, despite the fact that we've had like a 13% increase in the fatalities in the workplace across Australia in the last 12 months. I mean,
It's ridiculous, really. So you might as well just go with the reckless endangerment. If they're going to be prosecuted, that's probably what they would go to. But then WorkSafe will prosecute whatever they can work with, and I don't know what their agenda is, to be honest. But I don't think anyone probably knows. But I like to think that their agenda will be to get the right sort of punishment, so that to stop a recurrence and make sure the improvements that are made, and you go back and make sure that they are doing the right thing and they are doing the improvements. But they are also, I think, hamstrung in that they don't have enough personnel, so there's not enough funding. So it all comes back to funding once again. So I think maybe there's a school of thought, I think, that WorkSafe are trying to prosecute people in all sorts of various ways so they can make the money back off that, so they can do more recruiting and what have you. So, but I don't know if that's true or not. It's just a school of thought that I've heard from here and there.
Yeah. It's one of those things that I think most people in safety would love there to be more inspectors working for your regulators, but there's very few of us in the general public who are putting our hands up to say, hey, we'll pay more taxes so there can be more inspectors. it's one of those chestnuts. And I think because of limited staff, they're literally having to pick, inverted commas, winners when they go to prosecution.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's where they put improvement notices on instead, and pins and those sorts of things. So, it's not too often you'll see people go to court unless there's been a death or a serious head injury or something like that.
Yeah. All right. Now, what's been the best, in a workplace, what has been the best type of support you've got from senior management?
Oh, that's easy. Right now, the support I'm getting right now from Murat is outstanding. Mm-hmm. My immediate boss, I've got $2 line. I've got dollar line reporting. So one goes to him. I don't see him very often. He works out at Laverton, but another one I work closely with in Port Melbourne, Aaron Maley. I drop the name again. He's been fantastic. Just the support he's been given, and it's just been incredible. I'm still working from the hospital bed. But there's only so much work you can do remotely. But they're all stepping up, and the order management team stepping up to do more work for me. Well, I can't be there to do it. I can facilitate it back here, and I can do some paperwork back here and electronically in that. But they need to be out there more physically, being more visual leaders than they otherwise would be. So they've been really outstanding in all ways. Like, I haven't missed out on any pay or any conditions. So we actually did an exercise where the head with the stuff that I do, and they give a rough time, and They threw it to me, and I had a few bits and pieces in there, and then they went down. Oh, looks like we're overworking you. So, hello, yes, you are. So pay me the money, show me the money. But so seriously, they recognise that there's a lot of work that's been done. So they've really been fantastic in supporting me. So I think they're looking at putting on another person to help out, not just where I am, but across the Oceania areas. So, yes, I can't fault their management. And also, if I go through the whole LinkedIn post that I did when I was, I thanked everyone for their support over my journey. There's a heap of people, and currently is the current one. If we go back and there's one still, it's all sorted. George Glad from Sabalco, they were absolutely fantastic. That place there, they had a really poor culture, and when I left, they had a really good culture. And that's thanks to them listening to me and supporting all the stuff that I wanted to do to change the culture there. So, and that's what I'm saying, that commitment, ongoing commitment, and that's what happened there. So many thanks to them. I think going down the list now, I'm trying to think. Plus, I've worked at now. Tony Jenkins from DHHS, he was also fantastic. For those of you, John DeLeader, Mel Stadium, brilliant, absolutely brilliant bloke. Still a mate of mine as well, still. So, yeah, there's a whole list of people. So, but currently, I just can't fault how Murat has been so supportive to me and everything that I wanted to do prior to this lung cancer thingy. All the stuff that I had brought in, wanted to bring in. When I had an interview with Aaron, it was like talking to myself in some ways. We were all both in exactly the same place, wanted the same outcomes. And I thought, this is brilliant. And it was a great, great start point to have a manager that has got his head in the right space.
Yeah. Back when you were first starting in as a safety professional, Wayne, did you find it difficult to find your own voice?
No, yes and no. Because I come from the shop floor, I found it pretty easy to mix and mingle with the guys on the shop floor and get to hear what they were saying and be an active listener. So, and like I said, very difficult. It was fantastic. He said that he only, what he did was unlock my passion, but I think he did a lot more than that because he actually backed everything that I wanted to put forward. And so that support was fantastic. And I think that helped me. One still actually helped me a lot in gaining that voice and getting that confidence to be able to present, because I've only presented, not too many times since, excuse me. And it can be daunting at times. But I think that, excuse me, the one skill is actually really good in educating you on how to present and be effective with your presentation. So I got many things to do. One skill back in the day, of course, for that. So it was an interesting start, but it wasn't terribly difficult for me because I think I was always natural, not outspoken, but not too back we come forward.
Good, good. All right. Is it our duty as people who are, getting on a bit in the workplace, is it our duty to actually mentor people starting off in the safety industry?
I believe so, yes. Absolutely. In recent times, different environments. You've got to be able to mentor people and why mentor the HSR now. I won't go into too much detail, but there's one HSR who had, there was two HSRs. I'll tell you a story. There's two HSRs. They're both very similar people. And one went off to union-run organisation to do the training, the HSR 5-day training.
Yep.
And one went off to another organisation who was non-union related and come back. Both very different people. Yep. They're both from the union. One just put pins on straight away.
Yep.
The other one was a bit more methodical. And he was getting some wins on the board. The other bloke wasn't getting any wins. And he go, "Why am I going to bring you wins? Blah, blah, blah." And I said, "Mate, just cool your heels. And I'll have to re-educate you how to behave as a HSR." So those sort of guys I mentor all the time. I try to get in the front with the HSR straight away to make sure that they've got their heads in the right space and that they know that they've got the support that they need. And that's where I think me being a HSR in my previous life has helped me enormously to have that conversation with the HSR so they can have that confidence that, hey, I'm on your side. I have your back. You'll have my backing all the time within reason. So that's really helped me in good stead. So yes, we do need to be mentoring people, particularly the HSRs, because they're the more likely ones to come through that career path.
Yeah. All right. Finally, I'll just give you one more question, Wayne.
Sure.
If you had one piece of advice for someone who is aspiring to get into the safety field, what would it be?
Make sure that you have passion about it. Make sure you are absolutely passionate about it. You're doing it for the right reasons. Question yourself why you want to look after people's safety. What's in it for you? And what's in it for others? People say, whatever you do is going to have a direct impact on people, good or bad. So you need to be sure that your passion is absolutely genuine and that your passion is not going to be controlling you every step of the way. You've got to be able to control it, and you've got to be in control of yourself. So I'd be questioning, make sure that you're doing it for the right reasons, not just because it's the sexy industry, whatever you want to call it.
Or the high-paying industry either.
No, well, it's not that either, no.
No.
I think the wealth might be about 20K at least.
Yeah. Wayne McCoy, absolute pleasure speaking to you today. All the very best, mate, and good luck with the chemo. And I'm hoping you'll be around to come and talk to us again sometime soon.
No worries, mate. I'll be more than happy to do that. And thank you very much. It's been most enjoyable talking to you too, Tom. Fantastic stuff.
Thanks for listening to Health and Safety Conversations with Tom Bourne. Until next time, stay safe and enjoy the rest of your week.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.